Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. It's the Test of Friday edition. How you doing, Fancy Pride, man?
I'm all right, man. I'm all right.
Welcome to Friday, brother. Last
Happy
one be
Friday.
Last one before you get a little bit of a wake-up call heading down to Disney. I'm happy for you and your family, man. We're going to miss you, big guy, next week. But we'll sludge through without you. Evan here in Madison in the world headquarters, lightly screening your calls all day long at 844-967-2789. And I've got to admit, I've wasted a lot of my day watching the testimony of Marjorie Taylor Greene. She was a hostile witness at best.
I keep hearing about the hostile witness situation. I'm very happy that it got used. And no one ever gets to be portrayed. It's always permission to treat the witness as hostile, and they never give it the permission.
Well, the permission was granted. But we'll get back to the Marjorie Taylor Greene. That is perhaps not the most important story of the day. And Lordy, there's more tapes. Kevin McCarthy. We talked a lot about Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell even. And the New York Times reporting of how they reacted in real time to the January 6th. And they were very brave, according to the reporting behind closed doors. And Kevin McCarthy came out yesterday and said, I was not brave. You can't prove I was ever brave. Not even in private. Effectively, he was standing with his man, Donald Trump. But Lordy, there was a tape. And the journalist, Jonathan Martin, and I'm sorry, I forget the other's name, they went on Rachel Maddow last night, and they brought the tape. And then apparently CNN got even more of the tape. And we're going to share some of the tape with you, our fine audience. You are deserving. But before we do, I want to talk about another January 6th story. Oh, yes, by the way, fine guest coming up in the next hour, James Santel, former U.S. attorney. So all your legal questions are going to get answered. And Dom at 5. Yeah, less excited about Dom. Doesn't have his jurisprudence or anything, although he's got an MBA, whatever that's good for. Here is the other January 6th point. J6 committee member reveals the 6 most chilling words of the entire thing I've seen so far. Well, that was a captivating headline. It had my attention, Travis Geddes over at the Raw Story, but I read in, and I'll share with you. Rep. Jamie Raskin, Democrat from Maryland, promised that the upcoming House hearings for the J6 Select Committee would provide dramatic revelations from their investigation of Donald Trump's role in the insurrection. And I got to warn you people, I've got a spoiler alert. We're gonna do a little reveal right here on the big show. So keep that in mind. Might wreck the hearings for you later because we're going to jump ahead in the book. The Maryland Democrat spoke Thursday at an event hosted at Georgetown University Center on Faith and Justice in D.C. And he said the committee would hold public hearings in June. Thought it was May, but now it's June. And planned to produce a report of their investigation by the end of summer or early fall. Yeah, because you got elections in November. You better crank her out. According to this reporting, Raskin said, the hearings will tell a story that will really blow the roof off the house. Yeah, blow the roof off. Woo, woo. More from Raskin. No president has ever come close to doing what happened here in terms of trying to organize an inside coup to overthrow an election and bypass the constitutional order. Now, we've suspected all this, but we're hearing more and more of the Liz Cheneys and the, you know, Jamie Raskins of the world, the J6 committee members. They're saying it publicly now. Here's more from his statement. And then also use a violent insurrection made up of domestic violent extremist groups, white nationalist and racist fascist groups, in order to support the coup. So this is a pretty direct point that, you know, it wasn't just pure happenstance that the Proud Boys and militia members showed up, almost like there might have been a organizing conspiracy behind this whole idea. Well, it gets a little better. Again, it's a spoiler alert. It's going to wreck your whole appetite for June's primetime hearings, but I'm gonna feed your hunger right now. Raskin said the committee would present evidence of coordination between Trump, his inner circle, and his supporters who attacked the U.S. Capitol to halt the certification of Joe Biden's election win and drive his electoral vote total below the 270 majority threshold, which would then move the election to the House, where Republicans would have a majority needed because each state would get only one vote. Well, that was the Don Jr. plan, right? He was texting that one to Mark Meadows by like November 6th, November 7th. So keep that all in mind. But here's where the plot thickens. Again, a quote from Raskin. It's anybody's guess what could have happened. Martial law, civil war, you know, the beginning of authoritarianism. I want people to pay attention to what's going on here, as do I. Before that's as close to fascism as I ever want my country to come again. And this was not a coup directed at the president, Raskin added. It was a coup directed by the president against the vice president and against the Congress. Now let's slow down and think about this for just a minute. It was directed towards the vice president and the Congress. Well, we certainly know the plan was what? To pressure Mike Pence to not certify the Electoral College count. That was the big plan. That's our plan. And there were plenty of co-conspirators, guys like Ted Cruz, you know, a few congressional Republicans that wanted to object to the Electoral College count, mostly of other states, not even the states they represent. You know, because that would be admitting that, you know, the ballot that they were, quote unquote, elected on were invalid, because that's what they're claiming, despite, you know, a lack of evidence. But again, remember what Raskin said. It was a coup not directed at the president. It was a coup directed by the president against the vice president and against the Congress. Now here comes the punchline. Raskin suspects the vice president's Secret Service agents were reporting to Trump's agents, and the plan was to take Pence away from the Capitol to corrupt the certification process as part of the insurrection, to get Mike Pence in a car and take him away. And Mike Pence wasn't having it. Now, this is new news. This is something I had never heard before. I'm going to quote Jimmy Raskin once again. He is a member of the January 6th committee. And here's the claim he's making. Pence then uttered what I think are the six most chilling words of this entire thing that I've seen so far. I'm not getting in that car. I'm not getting in the car. The vice president would not get in the car on January 6th. He was being led, you know, to safety, right? And Mike Pence's instincts, his gut said, don't get in the freaking car.
This is a movie plot point.
Raskin said he knew exactly what this inside coup that they had planned for was going to do. So Mike Pence had some insight that Raskin claims, and his Secret Service agents were probably reporting to Trump's Secret Service agents. So in some way, shape, or form, it's being implied here that Trump was being assessed of where the vice president was. And they took him down to the loading docks. We had heard this from earlier reporting that Pence was led to effectively the loading docks. And if you look at some earlier testimony, where was the rendezvous point of the Proud Boys, of Alex Jones's people, of the Roger Stone guards? guess what? They were all rendezvousing at that very docking point at the U.S. Capitol, the secret exit point for the vice president. And the VP would not get in the car. So it makes me wonder, what was the greater plan for Pence, for his body? I mean, I'm not saying they were going to kill him, but there were threats. Hang Mike Pence in the Capitol building, right? So he was being chased out by a riotous mob. And then they were going to meet him at the docking point, and he knew better. He wouldn't get in the car, which means that Mike Pence never left the complex. Mike Pence was effectively in hiding when the Proud Boys showed up at the docking point looking for what exactly? Perhaps the departure point of the vice president, Mike Pence. So, I mean, I'm really starting to wonder, was there a additional greater plot underfoot to effectively render Mike Pence to kidnap the vice president against his will, take him off campus, even if it was just for some sort of electoral gain in their mind? If they controlled the body of the vice president, I mean, literally the person of Mike Pence, they somehow thought this was to their benefit. And therefore, our vice president, Mike Pence, was probably in harm's way the entirety of the time the J6 insurrection was going on. You know what? I'd love to hear what Mike Pence had to say about that day. His aides have testified to the J6 committee. Mike Pence, so far, no public testimony. Now, I'm not sure if they would need a subpoena. I don't know if the J6 committee would go this far. But what was he afraid of? What did Mike Pence fear for? I mean, clearly, he feared for his life from the riotous mob in the building. But he was more fearful of getting in the car. Think about that for a minute. And this is a guy guarded by Secret Service agents. But maybe the Secret Service agents weren't there for his benefit, per se.
Every mob movie I've ever seen has the hero having to decide whether to go in that car or not. Or someone gets in a car and goes away and never comes back. That's a trope at this point.
That is some crazy news. And I mean, in real time, Republicans reacted to this news and they thought it was crazy news. They thought that real action should be taken against the president of the United States. And we've seen new reporting. New York Times reported it yesterday. And then Kevin McCarthy denied it. But Lordy, we got the tapes. Come back, more Devil's Advocates.
Our vice president, where is our vice president?
This president is fighting every single day.
You're going to be dead.
I think the White House could have handled this better.
...60% of the time, they're right every time. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Test of Friday edition. The custom is we air grievances up in here. Join us, 844-967-2789. New tape. Lordy, new tape. And Kevin McCarthy, his statements yesterday didn't age very well. And there has been some reaction to the new tape, even amongst the Republican caucus. Now, there were some that immediately stood with Kevin McCarthy. You know, he's going to be the Speaker of the House as soon as November rolls around. I did see that out there from a few supportive caucus members. Adam Kinzinger, less supportive. Now, he is not running for re-election. He is on the January 6th committee. Him and Liz Cheney are the bipartisan part. But Kinzinger, a member of the House Select Committee investigating the J6 riot at the Capitol, said audio of House Minority Leader, I'm going to call him wannabe speaker, Kevin McCarthy, bashing former President Trump shows that GOP leaders think their voters are dumb. They kind of do, don't they? I mean, I'm not saying they're so far from right, but they have no respect for their own voters.
I'm not asking their voters to go maybe vote liberal. I'm more just saying if you knew what the people that you vote for do, I think you wouldn't vote for them.
Well, here is what Kinzinger was tweeting out after McCarthy, what, lied in response to the reporting at the New York Times. Oh, it's the New York Times. Can't trust it. It's a lie. Except it wasn't, because they dropped the tape on Rachel Maddow last night. But here's what Kinzinger tweeted out. Wow. McCarthy literally today said this was a lie. And just a few hours later, the tape with his voice from his mouth proves that was a lie. Incredible. That GOP leader ought to be ashamed. Republicans, your leaders think you are dumb. Let's be done with them. Yes, let's please. The Illinois lawmaker is one of two Republicans on the J6 committee. We talked about that. The tape dropped on Maddow last night. But I think we can also share some of this sound with you, our fair audience. Because, you know, what's Rachel Maddow got on us? Other than a huge audience. But, you know, she's not going to do it every day, and we will continue to do so. But anyways, here...
Oh, we're getting her slot? Awesome.
Not so much, but, you know, perhaps part of her huge audience. A call between Liz Cheney, you know her, Dick's daughter, and Rep. Kevin McCarthy, the wannabe speaker. Let's play it with a little bit of context here. Cut number 30, the female voice is Liz Cheney, the spineless male voice is Kevin McCarthy.
Liz, you on the phone?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks, Kevin. I guess there's a question. When we were talking about the 25th Amendment resolution, and you asked if you know what happens if it gets there after he's gone, is there any chance, are you hearing, that he might resign? Is there any reason to think that might happen?
Well, let's see what Kevin McCarthy's answer to that is. The very thing he denied yesterday, you know, sort of the shaggy defense, didn't age well. Play cut 31, Kevin McCarthy, bold-faced liar.
I've had some few discussions. My gut tells me no. Now, this is one personal fear I have. I do not want to get into any conversations about Pence pardoning. Again, I mean, the only discussion I would have with him is that I think this will pass, and it would be my recommendation we should be done. I mean, that would be my take, but I don't think he would take it, but I don't know.
Well, there was enough context there, and we heard enough of the tape, and there's more sound that's out there being circulated, but effectively, Kevin McCarthy, you're a freaking liar, man. You did indeed say that you wanted Trump to resign. And you did make the claim, at least during some of the tapes I've heard, that you were going to be the guy that made that call to the old man. But, you know, you lost your spine somewhere along the way. And then eventually you went down to Mar-a-Lago and you kissed the ass and you kissed the ring. And you forgot about all those strong words and that courage you had in the face of the violent insurrection at the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. But if there was a greater plot to kidnap the Vice President of the United States, if that is what's being implied here by the statement of Jamie Raskin, the January 6th committee member, I mean, I got to think that's going to move a few Republicans. You know, it's hard to dismiss an accusation of this sort, and you could think, well, that's crazy, Crudy. No one would ever try to perpetrate a plot of this sort against a sitting vice president to what, try and overturn the Electoral College? Well, A, we know the plan was already in place, right? Whether or not it included the rendering of the vice president, but one of the people involved in this little action that stopped the steal, the ellipse, if memory serves, Fancy Brian, wasn't there pardoned formerly National Security Advisor Michael Flynn? Wasn't he a big part of this?
I believe he might have been.
Well, somehow history has forgotten about the fact that he stands alleged and accused of being hired to render, to effectively kidnap a Turkish cleric. You know, so the charges they leveled against him that he was later pardoned for, but he was convicted before he was pardoned, the charges where he didn't register as a foreign agent. But the actual action he was supposed to take on behalf of a foreign country was to render, to kidnap a Turkish cleric and take him to a dark site.
You know, some people go and hunt deer. Some people render Turkish clerics. It's the same thing in essence, right? You can apply it to the vice president, for example.
Well, I haven't seen specific allegations as such, but yeah, man, how big a leap is it to think we'll just take Mike Pence on a joyride? We'll just take him off the reservation for a while. Me and Dominic actually did that to state rep Brett Halsey when the guy decided he was going to run for governor. You know, sort of challenge the more acceptable Democratic eventual primary winner, although she lost to Scott Walker. But, you know, he's at the thing and he's being a goofball. And Dom and I said, hey, get in the car with us. And then we locked the doors and we hotboxed his ass and we took him off campus. Well, I think that's exactly, at minimum, what they had in mind with Mike Pence. Perhaps not the hot boxing.
Well, if
but I'm not sure they ever would have dropped him back after recess, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, if they ever wanted to check, maybe they should try it out on a governor first. Maybe see if that would work.
Well, that's interesting. Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan. Let's not forget, there was a plot afoot to kidnap her, right? That was mentioned at the Marjorie Taylor Greene testimony today. They're trying to keep her off the ballot. We'll tell you all about it. Come back. It's the Friday edition. Testify. Devil's Advocate style.
What have they got that I ain't got?
Courage.
You could say that again.
Shame. Shame.
The Devil's Advocates. Radio for nasty women everywhere.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Test of Friday edition. Hope you are a part. You can testify right here at 844-967-2789. Now, I want to jump back. Jamie Raskin, we heard this new intriguing statement that the vice president refused to get in a car that was waiting for him at the loading dock on January 6th. They effectively took him from his chambers, from the Senate chambers where he was certifying the Electoral College vote for Joe Biden. Well, there had been some objections, of course, but he was rushed from the chamber and he got to this car waiting for him. And he said, hell no, I'm not getting in that car. And that was new news to me. And if the vice president had such a strong inclination against leaving the U.S. Capitol where there was a mob scene looking for his head, literally, hang Mike Pence. That's new news. And I believe I had read some specific reporting about allegations that the Proud Boys and others were there at the very loading docks where Mike Pence was supposed to have taken this car. So let me bring you back. This is like a month ago. Reporting at the Washington Post. Let's not forget there are civil suits against the former President Trump regarding the very topic of perhaps a conspiracy with outside groups. That's what's being alleged in a federal lawsuit. A Philip Bump at the Washington Post reported back at the end of February. There were three things that jumped out at me from a D.C. District Court Judge Emmett Mettis decision that lawsuits targeting the former president, Donald Trump, and two extremist organizations could move forward. You know, so basically, he found that there was some merit there. This federal judge did. Philip Bump enumerates the three things. That is three things beyond this remarkable paragraph, and I'll read it for you, our audience. This is writing from the federal courts. The court concludes that the complaints established a plausible, and then quotes the very statute, 1985-1, conspiracy involving President Trump. That civil conspiracy included the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, Proud Boys leader Enrique Tarrio, and others who entered the Capitol on January 6th with the intent to disrupt the certification of the Electoral College vote through force, intimidation, or threats. Now, that's not some freaking liberal saying that. That is the conclusion of the federal court as they allowed these civil lawsuits to proceed. Now, back to writing up Philip Bump. Before moving forward, it's very important to qualify those sentences in two ways. The first is that Mehta, again, he's the judge, is not saying that this conspiracy was proved. Rather, that it is not implausible that it might be. There's probable cause there, at least to the civil standard. It's the difference between going to trial and reaching a verdict. Pardon me, the second important qualifier is that Mehta, again the judge, is describing only a civil conspiracy in keeping with the nature of the lawsuits brought by several members of Congress that he was considering. Now, this is Michael Fanoni and Eric Swalwell and many others that are suing over this, using the federal courts to try and get the truth out there. A civil conspiracy, Mehta writes, does not require that the conspirators, and here's his quote from the ruling, entered into any express or formal agreement, or that they directly, by words spoken or in writing, stated between themselves what their object or purpose was to be, or the details thereof, or the means by which the object or purpose was to be accomplished. as bump rights. They don't need to know all the details of the plan or all of those participating in it. They only need to have come, and here's the quote, to a mutual understanding to try and accomplish a common and unlawful plan, the general scope of which was known to each person who was to be held responsible for its consequences. The evidence at hand, Meta concluded, suggests that such a conspiracy may have been in place between Trump and members of those right-wing extremist groups. In other words, you know, we knew about this Green Bay sweep, this theoretical coup put in motion, and it's a lawyerly sort of a peaceful coup, if you will, this procedural coup that they were undertaking. But the action part of it, because it was a multi-pronged thing, involved the conspiracy. And let's not forget, I had forgotten, these Proud Boys, they went to D.C. before January 6th, and there were violent conflicts with Capitol Police before January 6th. So they already had a very recent history. Let me read on. There's no question, of course, that Trump encouraged people to be in Washington on that day, an encouragement known to have been acknowledged by members of those extremist groups. And there's no question that he, Trump, repeatedly directed his supporters' anger at Vice President Mike Pence and members of Congress who were meeting in the Capitol. There has been no proven indication that Trump had any direct connection with the extremist groups, though the federal judge Meta noted that details like longtime Trump ally Roger Stone having been seen with the Oath Keepers on the morning of January 6th might prove to be important. Yeah, that might be some evidence of import. But by the standards above, a legal one that doesn't necessarily comport with common usage of conspiracy, those actions suggest possible culpability. Now, Meta's argument is fleshed out by highlighting a number of less recognized elements of the period before the Capitol was overrun, including three that struck me. The he that was struck is the author here, Philip Bump, at the Washington Post. The first was his mention of previous incidents of violence in Washington. In November and December, this would have been 2020, Trump supporters came to D.C. to protest, and each time, scattered incidents of violence broke out afterwards as members of the Proud Boys skirmished with counter-protesters, again from the federal judge. On the evening of November 14, 2020, multiple police officers were injured and nearly two dozen arrests were made, the ruling reads. Then on December 12, 2020, supporters of the president clashed with District of Columbia police, injuring eight of them, which led to over 30 arrests, many for acts of assault. So there was a prior violence between these very groups and DC cops before January 6th. Sort of setting a track record, if you see what I'm saying here. As Bump writes, the president was aware of these rallies as he tweeted about them, and he would have known about the violence that accompanied them. In other words, there was every reason for Trump to believe that a protest on his behalf in Washington might attract extremists, and that those extremists might then engage in violence. It certainly cast a different light on White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows' statement that the National Guard would protect pro-Trump people on January 6th. Did you forget about that? They were worried about protecting the pro-Trumpsters. Marjorie Taylor Greene said, well, initial reports were they were dressed up Antifa people. We'll get to her in a bit. Back to Philip Bump. The second thing that stood out to him was Meta's repeated isolation of Trump having advocated for attendees at his rally to march to the Capitol. This is something Bump has written about repeatedly. There were several events planned for the day of January 6th, including the speech at the Ellipse outside the White House and a rally on Capitol Hill afterwards. Permitting for the rallies indicated there might be some movement between the White House and the Capitol, but that march wasn't authorized. When Trump explicitly called for rally attendees to march to the Capitol during his speech, he guaranteed, if unintentionally, that there would be a massive imbalance of protesters to law enforcement at the scene, allowing the Capitol to be more easily breached. And importantly, that call to to head to the Capitol surprised other organizers. One, Dustin Stockton, told the New York Times that the plan had been to stay at the Ellipse until the counting of the state's electoral slates was completed. There had been internal deliberations about the idea, which Stockton believed had been resolved towards staying near the White House. When he heard Trump call for people to head to the Capitol, Stockton worried that it felt unsafe. The march, Meta says, was an addition made by Trump and his campaign. Here's again a quote from the judge, I believe. It is at least plausible to infer that when he called on rallygoers to march to the Capitol, the president did so with the goal of disrupting lawmakers' efforts to certify the Electoral College votes. Yeah, no doubt. In other words, even if he didn't know that the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys' specific plan, it might certainly be part of a mutual understanding of what the day's desired outcome was. And Meta analyzes Trump's encouragement of the crowd during the speech that morning at length, while Trump had long pointed to his mention of the supporters peacefully and patriotically making their voices heard. The federal judge Meta notes that was offset by his far more frequent angrier exhortations. He also set aside Trump's arguments that his speech and his broader claims about voter fraud were protected as part of his duties as president. After all, he wrote, an effort to secure or perpetrate incumbency is not a function of the presidency. And the third observation by Bump here. The third thing that struck me was Meta's isolation of Trump's use of we language. Trump did this a lot as president and still does. It's part of what endears him to his audience. They often see him as fighting for their collective interests more than his own. That's how they feel. On the morning of January 6th, though, Trump's incessant use of we. All Mike Pence has to do is send it back to the states to recertify and we become president. We're going to walk down to the Capitol. It all bolsters the conspiracy question. We used repeatedly in this context implies the president and rallygoers would be acting together towards a common goal. That's according to the federal judge. That is the essence of a civil conspiracy. A little bit more. We're almost done here, folks. The ruling includes a breadth of other information and allegations, most of which will be familiar to those paying attention to the events of the day. But it is unusual in the way it directly connects Trump to the distributed effort to block the counting of the electoral votes. At one point, Meta summarized Trump's actions succinctly. I'll try to do the same. For months, the president led his supporters to believe the election was stolen. When some of his supporters threatened state election officials, he refused to condemn them. Liberate Michigan, right? Something like that? Back to the judge's statement. Rallies in Washington, D.C. in November and December of 2020 had turned violent, yet he invited his supporters to D.C. on the day of the certification. They came by the thousands. And following a 75-minute speech in which he blamed corrupt and weak politicians for the election loss, he called on them to march on the very place where the certification was taking place. As Bump says, none of this suggests that Trump will necessarily lose the civil cases that have been brought against him. It doesn't prove that civil conspiracy outlined by Meta will be proved to the satisfaction of the jury. But it is striking to read a document written by a federal judge in which he finds reason to believe that a sitting president may have conspired with violent extremists to retain power. And what if it was actually a grander plan to, let's say, kidnap the vice president of the United States? Now, I saw the little documentary, little footage of Roger Stone. The day he went to Joe Biden's inauguration. Actually, more accurately, I think he wanted to get the hell out of D.C. And he was riding in a car and a documentarian was filming him. And he said, you know, Donald Trump should have pardoned everybody, including himself. It's the worst decision Trump could have made. Well, Roger Stone would have known if there was a specific conspiracy, not just to, you know, go put a little pressure on the lawmakers. But why wouldn't the vice president get in the car? According to Jamie Raskin on the J6 committee, the vice president said effectively, hell no. Pence was not getting in the car, and he stayed on site. He'd rather deal with the angry Hing Mike Pence mob than get in the car being pre-offered. It's almost like there was a greater fear there to what action might be taken. The plot thickens. Come back. More Devil's Advocates, the Friday edition. We'll get to the phones next. 844-967-2789. Have your grievances ready.
Get in the car.
Everybody's doing it.
Now.
Okay.
I think the White House could have handled this.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen.
Kicking ass and taking names since the Wisconsin uprising. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show, the Testa Friday edition. I've been captivated by the evasive testimony of Marjorie Taylor Greene. She is being challenged, trying to keep her off the ballot in the state of Georgia, because the allegation being leveled against her is she helped to incite an insurrectionist riot. And if you do that, according to the U.S. Constitution, Article 14, Section 3, I believe, you are disqualified from appearing on the ballot. And we'll get to that. I mean, I have never seen anything quite like the testimony today. And she is a terrible liar. And I think there will be, you know, accusations of perjury leveled against her. You know, it's amazing. She sounded like Alberto Gonzalez. Our buddy Jeff from Mount Horeb shared a little video of former Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez testifying about firing all the U.S. attorneys once upon a time. And it was like a super cut of him saying, I don't remember. I forget. I don't recall. And Marjorie Taylor Greene followed the example to a T. I mean, she was hostile and basically completely couldn't remember anything. Didn't even know what she ate for breakfast if you asked her. But then when her counsel, this infamous attorney, James Bopp, who also happens to represent Michael Gableman right here in the great state of Wisconsin. Well, when he questioned her about specific, you know, tweets she sent out, let's say, oh, yes, that was me. I remember it was at 2:38 p.m. Central Time. It was amazing, this recall differential between the testimony that she wanted to give with the direction of her counsel and the testimony she wanted to evade giving under cross-examination. We'll share some of the sound in just a bit. We're going to share your Friday grievances right now on the phones, 844-967-2789. Sean from Madison, you've been a patient one. Welcome. What do you got for us?
I love you guys. I listen to you all day anyway, you know, whether I'm lifting weights or even running or whatever. Yeah, you guys are awesome.
What, are you trying to shame me because you're healthier than I am, Sean? Doing all that exercise and such?
Oh, my God. Can I not say anything positive at all? No, I'm joking. Hey, so isn't there a lot of exciting stuff going on with the MTG, with the Gableman, with the Kevin McCarthy? Like, I don't even know where to start. And then, oh, but the, you know, the Democrats are so horrible. We're so bad and stupid and ruining the country and everything. Why? How come a whole bunch of Democrats aren't, you know, in court or, you know what I mean, are getting their jobs maybe taken away or whatever?
Yeah, look at, it's ridiculous. Contrast the Obama administration. There might have been some offhand levels of corruption. But, I mean, they had the power of the subpoena. They did all kinds of investigations. See Benghazi and other topics. There was never anyone from the Obama administration that went to prison. There should be an entire Trump administration going to prison, starting with the top down. Sean, here's what I see in some of the reporting level today. Jamie Raskin on the J6 committee, I think, basically implies there was a plot afoot to kidnap the vice president. And the vice president instinctually in his gut suspected something of the sort, suspected something was amiss, and refused to get in the car. The most chilling six words, according to Jamie Raskin, that he's seen so far. So he was basically on campus during the entire Capitol assault when they're cheering Hang Mike Pence. Mike Pence wasn't in the bunker. He was hiding in the back room in the loading docks at the Capitol because he refused to get in the car. That's new news as far as I'm concerned, Sean. And, you know, I realize at this point, well, you missed part of the first hour, but if my speculation, if that is what Jamie Raskin is implying, that we're going to learn this summer that this crime was perhaps the greater crime, that they were going to, in fact, kidnap the vice president or at least control him, physically take him out so that a certification could not meet the legal standard. Well, man, that is a bigger plot still. And I mean, above and beyond the coup d'etat, I think that's got to impact Republicans' perceptions of the criminality of just exactly what was afoot here. No, it's a big deal, I think, Sean.
Yeah, that is. I didn't know about that, and that's good news. That's good news. Do you know more about this MTG thing?
I've been watching all day, sir. I've watched her testimony. It was some of the most evasive testimony I've ever seen. She's a horrible liar. I mean, so clearly she was squirming, or, you know, I know that you cannot accurately know if someone's lying just because they look away or whatever, but I mean, the expressions on her face, she was clearly troubled with some of her own words, and her only defense effectively was, I don't recall. And the questioning attorney for this Georgia firm trying to keep her off the ballot effectively asked the judge, can I treat her as a hostile witness? Can you force her to answer the questions? She shouldn't be able to filibuster every time I say something. And the judge said, yes, she is a hostile witness. Treat her as such. And ultimately, most of her answers were, I don't recall, I don't remember, you can't prove it was me. And, you know, I peaceful, always peaceful. Same defense Trump had. I wanted nothing but peace that day. Now, let me say something. Yeah. At the end of the day, Sean, I do not think this effort to keep Marjorie Taylor Greene off the ballot will meet with success. And a couple of things happened today during the course of the testimony. James Bopp, her attorney, took and brought to the attention of the, I think it's an administrative judge, hearing this from the bench. And they got to qualify for the ballot here pretty quick. So he's going to have to rule like in the next 10 days. But something she effectively did, she did a video, the sort of video that Donald Trump should have done on January 6th. And I think it's going to be her saving grace. She went into the Republican cloakroom off the House chambers, and she effectively made a video. She tweeted out saying, be peaceful, be chill, you know, don't be criminals. Well, that might be her only saving grace. And the fact that there is no actual criminal charges leveled against her, the fact that she wouldn't answer the question, one of the questions being asked is, did you ever discuss with the president of the United States that he should institute martial law? And she said, well, I don't remember. And the attorney said, does that mean it didn't happen? And she said, I don't remember. Meaning effectively, she didn't deny it. She's just using this coverall, I don't remember. She's using the Alberto Gonzalez. May keep her ass out of prison, may keep her on the ballot, but ultimately, I don't think history is going to judge her very kindly, Sean.
No, I've been talking to a lot of her constituents when these articles pop up, and they really do not like her. They really don't want her back in, and amongst themselves, they're like, please help us. Let's vote her out this time. She's wasting our time.
Well, that was the very courageous attitude of Mitch McConnell as well. Thought the Democrats would take care of that SOB Trump for him. Come back with us the Friday edition, Testa Friday. We've got some of the sound, Marjorie Taylor Greene, the judge. You want to stick around. It was quite interesting, if nothing else.
I don't believe in evolution. I believe in God.
I wish you weren't a liar.